Jai Parikar Sri Sri Guru Granga Sri Sri Gandharva Govinda Sundara Ju Ki Jai. Jai Parikar Sri Sri Guru Granga Sri Sri Gandharva Ki Giri Hari Ju Ki Jai. Jai Om Vishnupad Srila Bhakti Nirmal Acharya Maharaj Ki Jai. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Hari Vajakacharya Srila Bhakti Sundara Govinda Dev Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai. Jai Nityalila Vishnam Paramahamsa Parivajakacharya Srila Bhakti Vakak Shudar Dev Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Bhagavan Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Goswami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jai Nityalila Vishnam Paramahamsa Srila Gorkishore Das Babaji Maharaj Ki Jai. Jai Nityalila Vishnam Paramahamsa Srila Satchirananda Bhaktivinoda Thakur Ki Jai. Jai Nityalila Vishnam Paramahamsa Vaishnava Sarvabhauma Srila Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj Ki Jai. Sri Rupanuga Guru Varga Ki Jai. Sadgo Swami Prabhu's Ki Jai. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivajakacharya Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. Amacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Ananti Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasari Gaur Bhaktivrinda Ki Jai. Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shamakund Radha Kund Giri Govardhan Ki Jai. Ganga Mai Ki Jai. Jamuna Mai Ki Jai. Vrindavan Mathura Dham Ki Jai. Mayapur Navadeep Dham Ki Jai. Tulsi Devi Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Ki Jai. Sri Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai. Jai Sri Chaitanya Saraswat Mat Nuvamat Navadeep Dham Ki Jai. Jai Akar Mat Sri Chaitanya Mat Ki Jai. Jai Sri Navadeep Dham Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Jai Gaur Premanande Hari Gaur. Om Gyanatimarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunnalitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Vancha kalpatribhyascha kripa sindhyevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jai Shri Bhakti Raka Shura Dev Goswami Maharaj. I thought we would, I would like to talk today a little bit about some things that I learned from Srila Govinda Maharaj. Immediately after his disappearance, upon his disappearance, and immediately afterwards, whenever I was called upon to speak, I couldn't say anything. It was too... befuddled. I couldn't control myself. One of the things I asked, I told Gokulananda a few days ago that I was so fortunate because every difficult question that I had, I got the chance to ask Srila Govinda Maharaj. Maybe not now, some new questions will come and so on, but for me, he settled everything that I found was really some problematic. Should I do this? Should I do that? Should I think this? Should I think that? That sort of thing. And many of them sort of question that some might think inappropriate to ask Govinda Maharaj, but needed to be asked. And he was very open, and there was nothing that you couldn't ask. At least that was my experience. And he would answer and give an answer which you could accept, that this is the best answer that I can possibly hear. Thank you. And when I was saying that, something came to my mind, but suddenly I forgot it. Anyway, maybe we'll come back later. But he was very accessible to me in that way, and I needed that. I feel that I needed that, and by his grace, I got that chance. Many of us got that. I'm not alone. Many of us got that chance. So. I thought one important thing that is very prominent that I learned from Srila Govindamaraj, and I'm still trying to learn better, is to give respect to the feelings of the devotees, to honor the feelings of the devotees. The most prominent example of this, and I've told it before, I don't know if you have heard it before, but I'll tell it again. Around 19, I think it was in 93, could have been 1992. But it was just before one of his trips to the United States and one of his visits to Armat in New Jersey. And a couple months before that, I was in India, and for the purpose of inviting Maharaj, please come, when you travel, please come to New Jersey. And I was talking with him, and why the subject came up. Maybe he said something about the worship of Govardhan Srila. And I don't remember how the conversation got started, but I think it started with him saying something that we don't worship Govardhan Srila with Gunja Mala. Maybe mats or some devotees or something, this is their practice, but in our mat we don't do that. So this was around 1993. So this means almost 10 years that I have been worshipping Govardhan Srila with Gunja Mala. Because this Giriraj Govardhan Srila came to me in about 1984. Sort of miraculously, in the way I see it. And I was just telling Divya Shakti Devi that before taking sannyas, Srila Maharaj asked me two questions. Are you prepared to preach to the lady section? And are you prepared to go alone in the world? And sometimes I remark that I foolishly answered yes to both of those questions. But I had some confidence that I'll do it. I'll maintain my sannyas, and from hell or high water, I'll do that. So yes, I'll do those things, Maharaj. So from that time, practically, I have been alone, almost alone, mostly alone, or something. And for whatever reason, I don't know. But when I was around 1984, I was in, after taking sannyas, mostly I was traveling and selling books. I bought a van, and I filled it with books, and thousands of books. And drove around, went to some airports and shopping malls and all kinds of places, and distributed books from about 1982, when I got back the second time after coming here. I came here for Gaur Purnima in 82 after I'd taken sannyas to face the their loveliness, the governing body of ISKCON. And so they could render their decision about me. And when I returned then, after that, I returned in maybe April of 1982 and was told, don't go to any ISKCON temple, you're not welcome, etc. So then I had no place to go. And I think some of you are wondering a little bit about why Govinda Maharaj said that I would be Acharya of New Jersey, New York, and Detroit. I'll try and quickly tell you why I think he said Detroit. When I came back, I knew that I couldn't go to any ISKCON temple. I had a small American tourister suitcase, which was like the standard way that the book distributors traveled in those days. I was on the book distribution, going from temple to temple and training devotees and doing book distribution. We had kind of like a set, this is the package you take with you, you know. And it was like this little suitcase, and inside was a Therm-a-Rest mattress and a small lightweight summer sleeping bag, a couple clothes, and then a book bag and some whatever I put in the book bag. So I think I took those things to India. I had left from Detroit, and I arrived back in Detroit, but now I had no place to go. I had about $70 left for my trip to India, and no temple to go to, no house to go to, no friend to go to, no nothing. And here I am at the airport, new sannyasi, I have my danda, and I'm going to pick up the suitcase from the luggage turnstile. And by Krishna's grace, this man came up to me, an Indian man, recognizing that I was a sannyasi, thought I must be with ISKCON, and struck up a conversation. Oh, Maharaj, Dandavats or something, how are you? And such and such. And he asked me, so I guess you'll be going to the ISKCON temple. And I didn't know what to say to him, because I didn't want to disturb his mind. We are now fully embroiled in a dispute, a fight, you know, with ISKCON. They had made their position clear. We were not wanted, and Srila Sridhar Maharaj was not wanted in that society. And their preaching sort of started at that point about those things. And so, actually, come to think of it, I think before this, I had also gone to Bombay to try and do something there with Madhava Puri Maharaj. And we met with life members and that he had known through his previous associations. He had been thrown out of Bombay unceremoniously with just the clothes on his back, basically, after they found out that he had taken sannyas from Srila Sridhar Maharaj. That may have happened. Something happened. I can't remember exact chronological order. I'm never good at history. But I knew enough that it was like, from at least the side of ISKCON, it was all out war with anyone who had wanted to maintain his affiliation with Srila Sridhar Maharaj. Maybe it was because of something that happened with Jayatirtha. I don't remember. But it was clear to me that it was over with ISKCON, you know, clear to everyone. So I didn't want to get this man embroiled in that. I just tried to avoid the subject. Oh, well, you're going to ISKCON? Well, no, I'm not. Oh, you're going traveling on then? This is my stop. You have some friends or something? No. I'm like, I don't know what to say. Well, where will you be staying? I don't know yet. I don't know. And you could understand, you know, pretty quickly, I had no place to stay. And I said, why do you go to the temple? You know, and I said, there's a, you know, a big dispute, and I told them a little bit about Srila Sridhar Maharaj. They won't accept him, but I've taken sannyas from him, so I'm not welcome there. And he said, if fighting amongst brothers, you know, that will work out. You know, I'm sure they'll allow you to go there. No, and finally I convinced him they would not allow me. And then he said, well, then come to my house. He said, I'm picking up my sister. I've come to the airport to pick up my sister. She's coming for a visit. So come to my house. His name was Suresh at that time. And so beggars can't be choosers, and my only reluctance was that I didn't want him to get embroiled in this dispute, because I'd already seen that it was could be very vicious, and I didn't want him to be disturbed, you know.
Was he fairly connected with this kind of
Yeah, very connected. I'm about to tell you how connected he was. So he was in charge, or one of the ones in charge, of the life membership program for the Detroit Temple for ISKCON. So he kept, oh, don't worry, Maharaj. Oh, everything will be okay. Not to worry, you know. It can't be that bad, you know, and so on and so forth. So sort of reluctantly, but I, you know, also having no other choice, I accepted his proposal. I went to his house. He was so nice. His brother, I think it was his brother-in-law, had been staying there with him, and he had like a guest room. And he like immediately threw his brother-in-law out of the guest room, cleaned it up, and made it for me. And when that was all done, and I had, and I was tired because I had just come from India and time change and everything, I was exhausted. And so he asked me, you know, would you like prasad or anything? No, really, actually, I just like to take some rest. You know, he said, okay. You can sleep here, but in something like in a few minutes, some brahmacharis from ISKCON are coming, from the temple are coming, and we're having a program here, some or like a satsanga or something. And, you know, we'd be very happy if you would join us. And I can't imagine what would have happened if I had, but I was tired. I told him, well, you know, really, I'm just too tired. I don't think it would be welcomed, and better you just have your program, and I'm going to rest. And I just, like, went out like a light, you know. I just fell asleep. I slept for about maybe 3 or 4 hours, something like that. When I woke up, the program was all over. Everyone was gone. There was, like, no trace of, it was just like, there was no trace of anything beforehand when I went to sleep, and no trace of anything afterwards. It was just all over. So that all worked out very well. Then I ended up staying in his house for several weeks, a few months. I don't know exactly how long. He was so accommodating, so nice. We'd already had some discussion about the Mahamandal. Jagadananda Prabhu brought up yesterday. I had talked to Srila Sridhar Maharaj about, you know, he had suggested that we each, like, go out in our own ways and preach, and but with some general association called this Mahamandal. Sri Krishna Sankirtan Mahamandal, or something like that. And so I had asked Srila Sridhar Maharaj if I could use the name Vishva Vaishnava Raj Sabha. And the name I gave was the International Vaishnava Royal Society, the translation of that Vishva Vaishnava Raj Sabha. And he said, yes, you can do that. You can do that. You can use that. And so when I was in Detroit, then I did the legal work for making that, established Detroit Corporation. And I did all this while he was there, and then I managed to get some books from a devotee named Apoorva. He was sympathetic, and he had some books there that he would sell me, so he sold me some books. And I was able to go out to the airport and distribute some books and get a little income. Then I was able to purchase a van and this thing and that. And then I had some means to get around. So during that time, I'm telling Suresh Durgam, and Suresh at that time, and his wife about Srila Sridhar Maharaj. And then I left, and I was going someplace. I came back 6 months or a year later. I visited them again, and Suresh.
He wrote that book there. You know, perfect questions, perfect
right,
answers.
Right.
I think he just kind of came out recently.
Yeah, I think so. So, anyway, he asked for initiation from Srila Sridhar Maharaj. So, as Ritvik, I gave him initiation. And I'm pretty sure Srila Sridhar Maharaj chanted on his beads. I can't remember that part for sure. And I think gave the name, his name was Suresh, and Guru Maharaj added Durgam to that name. That, I'm sure of that. And then sometime later, I don't remember if I gave him Brahmin initiation at the same time. I think I may have. And sometime later, then his wife took initiation also the same way. And then he had three or four, I can't remember, friends also part of this life membership program. They were Indians, and they wanted initiation from Srila Sridhar Maharaj, so then they got initiation. And so that's how my name became associated with Detroit, through Suresh Durgam Prabhu and his wife and those devotees there. Why am I telling? I've forgotten. Why did I?
Because Shalabhan Srila. Huh? Shalabhan Srila was.
Oh, right. Wow. We're a long ways from there.
Well, not Shalabhan. Yeah.
Govardhan. Yeah. So, still, I don't know. How did I get to there?
Gunjamala, when you were saying people might be wondering about why you were Detroit, you know, designated as Detroit.
Yeah.
You were saying Govardhan Srila came to you in a very unusual.
Yeah, but there's some connection which I've now forgotten. Anyway, the only connection was I was traveling. That after taking sannyas, I was alone, and this is like the start of my aloneness. And so I was off in a van now, alone, and I had formulated a program before going to take sannyas. I had formulated a program with Yudhamanyu Prabhu and a couple other devotees to go to South Africa after taking sannyas and start some preaching there with them. And to do that, we thought we should take some books with us. So I bought a bunch. A few thousand books. From what was his another ISKCON devotee was willing to sell books to anyone. He didn't care what party you were with, you know.
Suradas.
So Sura, he didn't care. He just wanted to sell Prabhupada's books. If we would sell them, fine with him. So I went by St. Louis Temple where he was and loaded up the van with books, which were supposed to go to South Africa, but then somehow that got canceled. And then here I was with all the books that were originally for four people to distribute, you know, in South Africa. And now my van is like loaded to the gills with these books. And then I'm traveling and distributing the books. For a couple of years, and around 1983 or 84, some people that I had known previously invited me to come to Fort Worth and start a temple there. Because although there had been for years a temple in Dallas, nothing ever developed in Fort Worth, and I knew these people from the time when I was in Dallas, and they said they would give me a room or something and help me out a little bit, so they did. I went there. And eventually ended up renting a house so we could have our own place for our programs. But I was feeling lonely for probably about the first time. I don't know why. In traveling every day, my puja was that I was worshiping the Srimad Bhagavatam with some tulsi and some chandan. But I was feeling like sort of some interest in have the Lord in his form with me, you might say, something like that. But I also knew that, you know, that's not really our program, so I'm like a little conflicted that the deity worship is not the thing that we're supposed to be involved with. Our program is really Sankirtan, you know, preaching. And so, but I'm a little conflicted, but I'm thinking and I'm feeling a little bit lonely and thinking that it would be very nice if I had a deity to worship. And I got a call from Goswami Maharaj. Oh, someone, Braja, someone, I forget his name.
Sure.
Huh?
Bihari.
Bihari? He went to London?
Yeah.
Yeah. Braja Bihari and his wife, they're coming through on their way to some place, and they have a Giriraj deity that they don't feel they can maintain properly. They're wondering if you would like to take him. I said, you know, yes, make sure that they come to Fort Worth. You know, I want to see them. So they came for a visit. They stayed a few days and showed me how they were doing the puja for Giriraj. And so I took Giriraj and continued the same thing. And this was all, you know, sort of quick. When Goswami Maharaj called me, like 2 days later, they were in Fort Worth. So no time to really like prepare anything. But immediately after he arrived, then I sent Srila Sridhar Maharaj a telegram, I think, maybe a letter, telegram or a letter, and told him that this Govardhan Srila had come. I would like to use the name Sri Sri Guru Garanga Pindarvi Kagiri Hariju. Is that okay? And I got a reply back. Yes, it was good. So, giving that name and beginning that worship then. And when he came to me, already he was being worshipped with the Gunjamala. So I continued that. So, now fast forward to 9 years or so later, and I'm here in Navadvip in that room, which is now more or less Govinda Maharaj's kitchen area. So I was sitting there with Srila Govinda Maharaj, and somehow this subject of Govardhan Srila not worshipped with Gunjamala came up. And I was a little disturbed. I become attached, you know, you do something for 10 years, you know, and you become attached to that way of doing it and everything. And also I knew, you know, the story from Chaitanya Charitamrita with Raghunath Das Goswami and the Gunjamala and the Govardhan Srila. And so I'm thinking, it seemed proper to me. How can it not be proper, you know? And so I asked all these, so after Govinda Maharaj said that, you know, we don't do that here in our mosque, on this altar here, then I was, you know, putting the questions, why, you know, Chaitanya Charitamrita says this, and I thought I remembered seeing that at Chaitanya Mat, that Akar Mat, Chaitanya Mat, and Mayapur, that Giriraj is worshipped there with Gunjamala. Maybe I'm wrong, I don't know, but I remembered seeing someplace, and I think there, I mentioned that to him. And Govinda Maharaj was completely immovable. Giriraj is not worshipped with Gunjamala, not in our mat. And about that point, he said, oh, maybe they are doing that now at Chaitanya Mat. He said, but not during the time of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So, you know, no way, no how was this appropriate. You know, we do not do this. That is not our practice. Guru Maharaj would not want that, whatever, you know. So, okay. All right, I'm convinced. Do not worship Giriraj with Gunjamala. It's completely clear. There's no doubt in my mind. Govinda Maharaj has, you know, left it unmistakably clear. This is what should be done in our mind. So, okay, I return to New Jersey. Still, it's difficult for me, you know. I can't bring myself to separate the two, you know. That what we've been doing for so long, every morning, we're putting Giri Raj to bed in the evening with this Gunja Mala, in the morning taking Giri Raj out, putting him on the throne, taking the Gunja Mala, also putting with Giri Raj. The Gunja Mala represents Srimati Radharani. And after about 5, 6 days, 7 days, something like that, I just forced myself, okay, this is Govinda Maharaj's instruction. I have to follow it. And so today, the Gunja Mala will stay in the bed, and Giri Raj will be put on his throne without this Gunja Mala. So that went on, and then when I did that, Leela Sundi was like, no, Maharaj. Oh, she was like so disturbed. And it was impossible for her. She just could not accept it. And she was even blaming Govinda Maharaj. If he said that, then you shouldn't listen to him, you know, like that sort of thing. Don't do it, Maharaj. Even if Govinda Maharaj says it, then still, don't do it. You can't do it. You know, and she was like determined that, you know, no, she must be kept with Giri Raj, you know, that sort of thing. And, you know, and of course my position was, I'm very strong, you know, Govinda Maharaj said this, that will be done, you know, you're wrong, don't, you accept, you know, his verdict on this, don't think that, you know, you can, you have any position, you know, Govinda Maharaj is our authority, you know, we have no other authority, what he says, that's the law, you accept it, you know, that sort of thing. So, a few months later, or a few weeks later, and then Govinda Maharaj comes to New Jersey. And I'm doing the deity worship, waking Giri Raj in the morning and so forth, and putting him on the altar. And Leela Sundari like, catches the ear of Govinda Maharaj, you know, and starts telling about what this dastardly Giri Maharaj has done, you know, that he has separated the Giri Raj from Gunja Mala. And she cannot tolerate it. And then she's like, you know, telling Govinda Maharaj about this. She starts crying. How can you let this happen, Maharaj? You know, so many things. And I'm like, it's all going on in the midst of me waking up Giri Raj and putting him on his throne. And I'm hearing this like in the background going on. You know, Leela Sundari is making her case to Govinda Maharaj. Jai Sri Chira Dev Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai. So then I see that like Govinda Maharaj is starting to agree with her, you know. Yes, yes. Yes, what you say, it's true. That practice has been going on for so long, and you're attached to that way of worshiping something. And anyway, he's like fully, completely on her side of the issue.
What's wrong with you, cutting your hair?
So, yeah, exactly. He's like thinking, what kind of brute is this Kanan Giri Maharaj, who is dashing the hopes and the dreams of Leela Sundari against the wall as if they were yesterday's dirty wash or something. I'm feeling, oh, I am the greatest creep, you know, I am the most lowest of the low. What kind of horrid person am I to, you know, do this? And so I stop what I'm doing, you know, and I go out outside the altar and I go to talk to Govinda Maharaj and say, you know, I told him, Maharaj, I just heard what you were talking about, et cetera, but Maharaj, when I was in India, you were very clear that this should not be done. And he's talking, oh yes, that's right, you know, something like that. And I said, and now you think that it should be done the way Leela Sundari is saying? And he said, yes, Maharaj. He said, we must respect the feelings of the Vaishnavas.
You know, worlds, in my mind, worlds turning upside down, you know, going inside out, like, you know, Mother Yashoda, you know, seeing Krishna, you know, like the Virata Rupa, you know, and all of the, everything in Krishna's mouth, you know, like that's what's like, what's going on with me? So I'm making the argument that Leela Sundari was making, you know, a couple of weeks beforehand, and everything is refuted one after the other. No, you've got no case, no case, no case. I reject it, I reject it, I reject it. And now, you know, everything the opposite. No, but Leela Sundari, you have to respect the feelings of a Vaishnava. Uh-huh, oh, okay. So then I said, so Maharaj, you know, so it's, you know, completely clear. So Maharaj, you want me to go back to that way of worshiping Giriraj? He said, yes, Maharaj. Okay. Done. Settled.
So to this day you have...
Yeah, of course. Cannot be otherwise. And that I saw in another instance also with Govinda Maharaj. But actually, I don't want to, I've gone on actually longer than I expected. But so, you know, I'm not perfect in this by any means, and I don't know when to make that adjustment. Govinda Maharaj has said something, Srila Sridhar Maharaj has said something, Swami Maharaj has said something, Saraswati Thakur has said something. The devotee wants to do something that appears out of that line. You know, what do we do? Right? It's, these are like, everything is subjective. We're living in the subjective plane of faith. So we have to make adjustments. That was going to be my next example, but I didn't want to take up so much time, but yeah. And I asked Govinda Maharaj about that, because I'm seeing this now, you know, in Govardhan, and I'm wondering, like, again, you know, everything he told me, we don't do it that way, you know, and the mukuts, the crown, the this and that, and the eyes and everything, and now it's all there. And he said, no, the Pujari has done this, and I'm not going to change it.
We don't do the crown either. He was saying no crown, just the Shila. Just the Shila.
Very simple. Right. Very simple.
Even our Pujari, they're doing it here, too. In Govardhan, they were putting a type of tila on the eyes. And we were standing with Gurudev in the Arati, and he just, like, commented later, like, oh, he's looking like Garuda.
Well, you know, I'm thinking this sort of thing may be a little easier to accept if you're of the Indian culture. Because many, many temples in India have adopted traditions of worshiping the deity in some peculiar fashion. And that's now, it's just part of the leela of the deity, you know. It's like, it's just, now don't change it. You know, like you know, the story of Ramanuja when he went to Jagannath Puri and he saw, oh, this is not the proper deity, way of worshiping the deity. And so he began to try and institute, make it proper, right? He wanted to institute some changes to make it proper. And, you know, he went to sleep one night and he woke up in South India, Rangakshetra, I think. Like, oh, what happened? You know, Jagannath had thrown him out. And so that example for us is like, what are the traditions? Be very careful. Don't, you know, go and start thinking, I'm going to start changing these traditions that have already been established there. So a little easier, I think, people that are familiar with these histories to kind of adjust things. That temples and devotees and the deities, they things come in their own way, you know, for the pleasure of the deity, for his own satisfaction. I think, we can hardly imagine that the most respected pandas, the pujaris, the Brahmins who are worshiping the deity would be eating fish. It's just, how is it possible? How is it, in no way, no how is it possible? But in Jagannath Puri, it's possible, and it's accepted, and we are not to say one peep about it. It's okay. Jagannath has accepted it, then we are to accept it, and I guess it's in Bhakti, I can't remember, one of the books I think of Rupa Goswami, could be Sanatana Goswami, they mentioned clearly, if there's ever any question about the way deity worship should be performed, follow the example as is being done in Jagannath Puri with Lord Jagannath. That's the example. So
then we shouldn't use chilies and tomatoes and anything like that?
Jagadananda, these, you know.
That's how they do it.
If there's a question. For me, that's not a question. So, I wanted to give a chance for all of you to also, I hope to hear something of you. What have you heard from Srila Govinda Maharaj that has made an impression on you? This was something that has made a big impression on me in my life, trying to understand how to deal with everyone. Give honor, give respect to the feelings, the sentiments of the devotees. So, all of you have, I'm sure, something that you might be thinking of that Govinda Maharaj said and stands out in your mind, something that you would care to share with us. I'd be very happy to hear. Don't be shy, please. Vishakha, I know you're wanting to say something.
I can't think of anything.
No?
Times I've heard, like one time, devotees from London, they were coming here and telling me, oh yeah, when Gaurdev came to London, he told me who did this in the airport and that. So, no, that wasn't me. That was someone else who did that. And then another time.
Wait, what happened? They were saying
someone
you?
Made the arrangement for Gaurdev for his comfort.
Uh huh.
And Gaurdev went to London and said it was me. But it was not me. It was another person.
Well, he was given
the credit.
Thought it was you that had done it.
He gave me the credit
uh-huh.
for what someone else did.
Yes.
And another time, Gurudev, he wanted this book. It was a homeopath connected with astrology, famous astrologer. And he wrote a book about homeopathy in connection with astrology. So I heard that, and I tried. I ran all over Calcutta. I couldn't find it. And then I told his servitor, at that time his servitor, and he said, oh, I know where I can get it, so I'll get it. So he got it. And then he gave it to Gurudev. And then some devotees came from America, and I was sitting there, they were sitting there, Gurudev was talking with them. And then he mentioned, you know, and this girl, I wanted that book, and this girl, she got it. And he said, Maharaj, it wasn't me, it was that person. And he looked at me like, how dare you are. It's like, I'm the autocrat. I'm the creator of reality. And what I say, that is reality. What you think is reality, that is not reality. And I was like, oh.
He said that?
No, it was that look. It's like, how dare you are to say something different than what I say. And I realized, Gurudev, he can make you glorious or he can smash you. If he will say this boy is nonsense, the whole world will think this boy is nonsense. If he will say this is a very good girl, the whole world will think this is a very good girl. Maybe this girl very naughty or whatever. But he's the autocrat. He's the creator of reality. What he says, that is. That was like something I learned. Whatever he said, maybe you think it's right or wrong, you have to accept it. Because he's the autocrat. And to whomever he wants to give his glories to, you've got to accept it. Maybe you grind your teeth or you know, you think, why that person? But that's just the way it is.
Anyone else have anything to remember out loud?
Well, then he came to New Zealand in 1996. He came there and the devotees had arranged for a traditional Maori welcoming haka, it's called. It's a welcoming dance. And these big Maoris, you know. Yeah. And they came and part. And then at the end of
where
it.
Where was that?
New Zealand.
No, 96.
Right? 96. And he arrived there. And he'd never been to New Zealand before. He only ever came once. These big, like big Maoris, full tattoos all over their face, you know, fierce looking people. Doing this haka with these spears, and it's a welcoming. You know, there's different types, but this was a welcoming one. And then at the end, the tradition is that they rub noses. This is their thing, you know, they kiss and rub noses. And the Gurudev was right into it. And he's right, and we went right round the whole lot of them, rubbing noses with them. Because Saga Maharaj was there too, and Saga Maharaj is actually a New Zealand Maori. He comes from one of those tribes.
Really?
Yeah. He comes from the Ngāpuhi, sort of the dominant tribe in New Zealand. And he's big. And he sort of knew the tradition, he had been there for a long time. He sort of guided Gurudev around, and Gurudev rubbed noses with everybody. And he said after, and he said later, I thought they wanted to eat me. Because they're fierce looking people. And they used to be cannibals, you know, their tradition was cannibals. I thought they wanted to eat me.
And they blow on you too, don't they?
They rub noses and like that. But he did it, you know, he did it. He just thought, well, this is the tradition, I do it, you know, no problem.
After that, I think we went maybe to Hawaii and then to SoCal. And
yeah.
There was some sort of kind of like inside joke with those who had been with him there. And so Sagamar and Lohimar, I think it was Marginar and Zimar. But I couldn't figure out a way to keep joking about the Maoris.
He came back
chanting their chant, Kamate, Kamate, something.
Weren't you there?
No, but we heard about it forever.
Siddhanti Maharaj was there before he took sannyas. And he was waiting. Siddhanti Maharaj was, when I got to the airport, you know, we got spaced out and we just arrived there one at a time. And I was probably one of the first ones to come there, and Siddhanti Maharaj is sitting in a chair there, just dressed ordinary, didn't even look like he was waiting. I was walking past him, and he goes, what time's Gurudev's plane arrive? There's a lady, who's this guy, you know, just dressed ordinary.
He's in Western dress?
Yeah, just in Western dress.
Well,
yeah.
He was asking you if you didn't
recognize. I didn't know he was a lady, I didn't know him. I'm walking past him, and he goes, what time's Gurudev's plane arrive? Because I dressed, you know, like this. And I'd never met Gurudev before. You could meet the devotees got there, and could see Gurudev down there, and then he came out, and one of the devotees gave him a garland and paid the basis, and Gurudev, where do I hug him? And I had a garland, and thought, wow, get in on this. So I gave him the garland, and he's hugging everybody, and, you know, because he was fit and healthy. And, you know. And then the Maoris were waiting outside with their thing, and, you know, we weren't probably expecting just to go out the airport and get in the car and go, but then they walked out the airport, and the Maoris were all there with us.
Sagar Maharaj arranged for that?
No, one of the devotees there, Purna Brahma, he is a Maori, and he arranged that whole thing.
Nice.
The spirits don't violate the security?
The security was, nowadays, yeah, probably, but in that time, security was no problem.
Linda Maharaj is just like, was quite a
devotee,
and whatever the local tradition is, he was there, you know, okay with him. Yeah. He saw that. One that comes to my mind is Mexico. Many trips to Mexico.
That's exactly what just came to my mind.
These,
oh my God.
Dancers yes. would come. I think it's another name. Anyway, some sort of Mexican dance. And college age people would be trained in this dance. And I guess Madhu Chanda made this train.
Yeah.
Veracruz, the college was there in Veracruz where we trained. And I think maybe this first trip there or second trip or in the afternoon, we were staying in this very beautiful place. Were you there?
Yeah,
yeah,
hotel.
I was there.
So there's this palatial sort of house, and they had a big courtyard, and very nice arrangement. And they started setting up the stage in the afternoon. And they had sound system comes in, you know, all types of stuff. And then they do this incredible dance, like the kind of climax is that they're doing this. Most of the dance is with their feet, so they have to have a stage so it like reverberates the sound. It's like, it sounds like drums, really loud, heavy drum play. They're doing it all with their feet on the stage. And one of the things they do is they carry a glass of water on. So they do all this dance where they're running around and making this noise with their feet and all these things and all these glasses of water. And they're decorated in like some traditional, very glamorous outfit that the Mexican people, you know. Mm-hmm. Very beautiful. And there's a little, I would say, like, licentious nature to it,
yeah.
Because it's usually done at the time of a wedding, mm-hmm. And the way the girls are interacting with the men, the young ladies and the men, it's like a little bit like some interest in each other, let's say. And I must cover my eyes, you know.
And it was really funny because
all like, thinking the same thing or wondering the same thing, but you know, it was very just taking it all in. It's very beautiful, very happy, and he's feeling honored. This is their way of honoring me, and this is honors for my Guru Maharaj. He's very welcome, very happy. This is another wonderful learning experience. And I would say it doesn't match her story, but it was pretty close. And then every year they did that. And one time in Morelia, they brought a mariachi group, some men came. And the devotees had written some song in Spanish, glorifying Sri Linda Maharaj. And they were, I think the mariachi group was playing it, and the devotees were singing it. But they also played some traditional Mexican music, and the devotees were very happy, dancing, enjoying the end. It's very quite comfortable. In this one place, I guess it was Morelia, they had a big swimming pool.
No, that was Veracruz.
Yeah.
And the devotees were swimming in the swimming pool. He said, we should have a swimming pool in SoCal. Mm-hmm. And he built a swimming pool in Dover Dock.
Oh, is it a
swimming
pool?
There's a coon there. Yeah. If you're standing in front of the temple, facing the temple to the left, there's a coon. He was calling it a swimming pool. I don't know what's being done with it now or what came to be done with it. But his idea was a swimming pool, a place where the devotees can go swimming days and cool off or something.
I know how he originally wanted to dive into it.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
Oh, here? Really?
Yeah, but I and others also felt like people were just like playing in there, like disrespecting the water. But Gurudev himself like wants the devotees to enjoy the.
He suggested a diving board?
Yeah, I heard that.
You see, we can jump off the temple too as long as the deity's awake.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know. It's so scary. So,
it's a snake.
Yeah, so he showed us many new things, huh?
I was once in Puri with him, and some young person came up, maybe around 20, and he goes, "Maharaj, I've been in every mott in town, even the Ramakrishna Mission, and I'm asking if I can join, but no one will let me join. Can I join here?" So Gurudev turned to me and he said, "What do you think? Should I let him join?" I said, "Well, I like to give everybody a chance." He goes, "Yes, that's my mood too." So he goes, "Yes, you can join." So, the guy lasted like a couple of years, took initiation, whatnot, And Gadadhar was his name, Prabhu was his name, and like that. He'd always say, greet the guests. He praised the women for greeting the guests in South Cal and say, the men, they're too busy or whatever to greet the guests, But greet the guests, give them some prasadam, different things like this. Always, seeing to newcomers and seeing to give everybody a chance. Like he said, basically it's like they have to prove themselves wrong, not prove themselves right. Some people, let them prove themselves by living outside for a few months and rendering service and whatnot. And then maybe if they're like stellar devotees, then they can, if they're cured before they join the hospital, they can join the hospital. But anyways, like that.
I remember something else. I hope it won't be too painful for His Holiness Shripad Janardhan Maharaj to hear. But actually, Janardhan Maharaj was sort of the victim of many Govinda Maharaj's pranks and chastisements and many different things. But,
Baby Maharaj?
What was I going to tell you? This one is a good one. So one time, when the ladies' ashram started in San Jose, then Govinda Maharaj gave the name, I don't remember what it was, something Mohila Ashram.
Mahila
Huh?
Mohila Shaka.
Mohila
Shaka.
Shaka?
Mat.
Mat? Mohila Shaka Mat. And, Now.
Sri Chaitanya Saraswati Seva Ashram Mahila Shaka.
Oh. Mohila?
Shaka.
Shaka.
And it changed.
Yeah.
It used to be.
That's what I'm going to talk about. The change. So, the change came at Janardhan Maharaj's expense. When the change came, then Govinda Maharaj decided, we shouldn't give it this name, that indicating that it's a ladies' ashram.
or exclusively a ladies' ashram. And then anyone asked him about that, he said that was Janardan Maharaj's idea. That it be given that ladies' ashram? He said that was Janardan Maharaj's idea. No. That was, you know, like he wouldn't take any blame for it or anything. That was Janardan Maharaj's idea. Not mine. No. I've seen that happen a few times too. Like what Uma was saying about he creates the reality. And you know, who's going to challenge that? That was Janardan Maharaj's idea. Yeah, Maharaj, what kind of foolish thing, this, you know, giving an ashram a name, you know, indicating it's a ladies' ashram. Blaming, you know, we'll all blame Janardan Maharaj. No blame to Govinda Maharaj. That's the new reality. Okay, we all accept that. And Janardan Maharaj, like, takes the hit. He doesn't mind. He's, you know, he's agreeable. And this thing about welcoming, I remember also one time, I especially when Govinda Maharaj is there, but I saw that Govinda Maharaj, one time, I don't know, this is, you know, maybe also in the mid-90s, something like that, Govinda Maharaj was visiting SoCal, and he started talking about how we're not dealing with the guests properly. You know, this what Jagananda Prabhu was just mentioning. We're not welcoming enough, you know. And then he started blaming Janardan Maharaj for it. It's your mat, Maharaj. Why are you not welcoming the guests? And, you know, it's like devotees were complaining to Govinda Maharaj that there wasn't enough feeling of welcoming new people or guests or something. And then Govinda Maharaj just, you know, started putting all the blame on Janardan Maharaj. Yes, Maharaj, it's your mat. Why you're not welcoming? What's wrong, you know, that you're not doing this? This is your job. If you don't see to it, who's going to do it? You know, something, whatever, like that. Just like chastising him very heavily. And so Janardan Maharaj was then like, you're really trying to be, you know, more attentive to that. But it was never enough. It didn't matter. Govinda Maharaj was still on his case, you know, time after time, blaming him for this. And I was feeling, you know, I was seeing this, and I was seeing Janardan Maharaj is trying his best. He's, if there was any problem, he's changed. I see he's, you know, some new people came. He was down there, you know, like welcome them and say hello to them and everything. He's making an effort. Govinda Maharaj is just like relentless, you know. And I was like feeling really sorry for Janardan Maharaj. It was like too much to watch. Something like that. And there were many, many things like that. Very funny. Govinda Maharaj, Gokulananda has a great interest in an article Srila Govinda Maharaj wrote called Chalarpate. It's on the way, and it's this fictitional account of a railroad journey where some brahmacharis get on a train and some people start, this older gentleman starts harassing these brahmacharis. Oh, you like think you are sadhus or something, then da-da-da, and like in a, like, yeah, very derogatory way. And then the brahmacharis are dealing with that, and then the whole like car, you know, railway cars kind of starts getting involved in this transcendental conversation between this brahmachari and the other people in the car. But it's written in a very humorous style, and it's the article that in this letter that Srila Prabhupada wrote to Govinda Maharaj, one letter that he wrote, where he mentions that, I've read your article, I can see that you will be a great transcendental humorist. And that this is the article he's referring to. So Gokulananda wants to publish that. He's been fascinated with it for a long time, and so we finally got that. But Govinda Maharaj was so funny. He was, you know, really, he had a tremendous sense of humor. nothing escaped his notice. I'll tell you a very funny thing happened not very long ago. It happened in December. I have what they call here pajamas. It's just like, it's very simple pants, you know, that just some cloth pants that I was wearing when it's cold to kind of help keep my legs warm besides just the dhoti, you know. So it was cold and I was wearing these pants underneath my dhoti. And I went to pay my obeisances to Govinda Maharaj, and he had me sit down. I was sitting on the couch, and I was watching him, and he was looking at me, and I saw his eyes go to, you know, he could see like my dhoti had like come up like this, you know, and you could see like the cuff of my pants here, you know, these pajamas. And he just, you know, he didn't say anything, but I knew that he had seen that and he was thinking about it. I was waiting for him to say something. He never did say anything. But it was like one of those situations where I know he knows and he probably knows that I know, but neither one of us is going to say anything. And they felt just feeling very uncomfortable that, I don't know, he's thinking this is an odd thing, that I'm sitting here in this odd attire, but he's not saying anything about it. And it was very, very funny. So many things like that. Everything he noticed, you know, very acutely. And aware of everything. And unaware. Those who were there when this horrible spectacle took place where Shruta Shrava was yelling at Jamuna. I don't know which of you were there, but I don't remember when it was. It maybe a year ago, or maybe about a year ago. And Jamuna and Shruta Shrava were at odds with each other, and Shruta just like, you know, he's pretty wired to like to sort of short circuit pretty easily. And he became just so angry with Jamuna, and Jamuna was not backing down, and so she was like holding her ground, and then that made Shruta Shrava even more angry. And then he's like yelling at her that I'm going to throw you through the door if you don't get away, you know, something like that. And finally he had to be somebody, Ashram Maharaj, and someone else like kind of had to grab him and like pull him back, you know, so he didn't do anything like that. And this was all being done like at, you know, volume 10, you know, like full volume. Govinda Maharaj is sitting, like, if you see where I'm sitting, this is happening at that column. That's how close it was. Shruta Shrava is there, yelling at the top of his voice. Jamuna is not exactly yelling, but talking loud enough that she, because she wants Govinda Maharaj to hear what she's saying. And Shruta Shrava is practically carried out of the room. And Govinda Maharaj looks at us and says, well, what happened? He has to know what happened. No way anyone could not know what happened. And he looks at us as if he hasn't heard anything, doesn't know anything, and doesn't have a clue what's going on, and like, what happened? And I said, oh, some disturbance, Mara. That's over. Oh, okay. So he could be, you know, keenly aware of everything or oblivious to anything. As he likes. I also told him something one time, but maybe more than once, and something I guess he didn't want to hear. I don't know. He didn't want to respond to it or something. And I'm talking to him, and
then I say what I'm going to say, and then I'm waiting for his response. He's like, looks at the newspaper, like I hadn't said a word. Like nothing had come from my mouth, you know? And I'm like saying something that's very serious, very deep, worrisome, troublesome to me. And it's like, nothing. I don't know what the, you know, another thing that he taught was wait and see. And a lot of problems were solved by him saying nothing. Just wait, let some time pass, and we'll see what happens. But just by his saying nothing, you know, many, many things were avoided. Letters unanswered, or letters answered late after some resolution had come, and talks, or, you know, things like that. And he had a great wisdom about that. He accused himself of believing everyone too much, and himself, someone had told him that you should not speak so much, you know, like you should keep some things to yourself, don't say everything that out loud, you know, that you're thinking, but I cannot do that, I am telling everyone everything, you know, or something like that. But really, no, he had tremendous, that vacho vegan, tremendous quality of control over his speech. And there are so many instances of that. Anything else anyone else want to say? I can go. Should I go on a little more? I can tell you another example of that. Very funny. It must have been maybe around 96, I think, when he went on one of these world tours, and he went to Mexico, and he went to Mexico City, Veracruz, and Tijuana. And in Tijuana, it was when they had this big auditorium program, which incidentally, I think, I don't know if that recording, but the recording of his talk just prior to that, is on our website. It's available in Tijuana, Mexico. He spoke at a smaller gathering, I think, the day before. So,
what did he say? You could tolerate anything except that lack of spiritual testing. That one.
Maybe you remember that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow. Actually, we have a video of it. It's a video. So the next day was in this auditorium, big, like, there were at least, I think they sold 700 tickets. So there may be, you know, when you add the devotees and others, or, you know, must have been 800 or more people, something in that range. And very nice theater, so it was easy to speak, and the audience could easily see Govinda Maharaj and all of this. And Govinda Maharaj, another thing was interesting. I think I saw Govinda Maharaj use some notes prior to this when he spoke in Monterrey one time, another big event in Monterrey, a giant event, an unbelievable thing. And when he spoke at this event in Tijuana, I think it was at this event that he had a few notes that he'd written. And he would refer to his notes sometimes like that. He never uses notes. But for some reason, he thought to make some notes about what he wanted to talk about. And after he gave his talk, then he asked for questions. People were asking him different questions. And some man from the audience was asking him about, I think it was... Satya Sai Baba, yeah. And this man was very enthusiastic about Satya Sai Baba, you know. And obviously he was a follower of Satya Sai Baba. But his question to Govinda Maharaj was, the man talked for a little while, and he said this something, something, something. And so, what do you think of Satya Sai Baba? And Govinda Maharaj,
paused, you know, carefully paused, thought for a moment. And he said, I have never met the man. This is the man who was world famous, Satya Sai Baba, you know. When I was in New York in 1987, 8, something like that, there was a giant, giant Indian festival in New Jersey, just like in some big park or something, where thousands and thousands of people came to this huge production. And at the center of it was Satya Sai Baba. You know, it was being done basically as some kind of a program of his. And in India, everyone knows his name. So this man is asking, I've never met the man. You know, what do you think of Satya Sai Baba? I've never met him. And then the man is like, oh, but he's so famous, and you're from India, and he's from India, and he has, you know, whatever, so many books or something, and a big following or something like that. And then Govindamaya thought a little bit more. And he said, well, I had never met him, but through others, I have heard some reports about him, and they are not very good. And that was the finish. That was finished. Thank you. And then another man asked a question. So instead of getting into a big philosophical debate or, you know, establishing our position against his position or anything like that, never met him. Oh, but I have heard some reports. They are not favorable. They're not very good reports. And sort of the same thing at this other big event in Monterey. I think the first time that he went to Monterey for this big event there. I wish I could remember the dates. I don't remember the dates, but this was the biggest, best event I've ever seen to date in my life, and it was just completely wonderful. Everything about it was wonderful. And the devotees, headed by Sripad Ashram Maharaj, and Madhu Chanda, and Lakshmi Rani Devi, and now Arjuna, the temple president in Monterey, and others, organized this tremendous event at a convention center in Monterey. Now, Monterey is not very much different from the United States, and their convention center, in other words, they have good highways and every you know, they have good facilities there. And this convention center was like a beautiful first-class place like you'd find in any convention center in the United States, you know, like Dallas or Philadelphia or San Jose or something like that. And they had rented a big hall there, probably capable of seating 1,500 people, maybe even 2,000. I think if necessary, probably you could put 2,000 people in it. They didn't have enough chairs there for that many. I think they maybe had 1,200 chairs or something in that range. A big, beautiful stage, and they had big banners of Srila Sridhar Maharaj, and I think of Govinda Maharaj, and everything beautifully done, and they had a little booth, special booth for a translator, and when people came in, they got a pair of headphones and a little wireless thing that we'd put on their belt, and then they could put on the headphones, and they could select two channels, English or Spanish, you know, whichever you like. And so they hired a translator, or a special translator, to translate from English to Spanish. And Ashram Maharaj also, sometimes he translated. And but the big event where Govinda Maharaj spoke, and this lady was in the booth translating, Ashram Maharaj was on the stage with us. And Govinda Maharaj gave a beautiful talk, and I think after, when he came in, none of us knew what to expect. We were staying at the house of the daughter or daughter-in-law of, I think her name is Madhumayi.
Yeah.
Madhumayi. And she had a really very nice house. And, huh?
She's just here.
Ah,
very
was she?
Short
ah. So she had a very, very nice, very beautiful house, very nice, and she helped make a lot of these arrangements. She knew a lot of like high society sort of people, and she brought many of them to see Srila Govinda Maharaj while he was there. And the sannyasis like myself and Sagar Maharaj, Ashram Maharaj, Janardhan Maharaj, I'm forgetting a couple more were there. Chidananda Prabhu, he was there. We spoke in the morning, like from 10 o'clock till like 2 o'clock, something like that. Then there was a break. And the big event was at 7 o'clock. Govinda Maharaj was coming to speak at 7 o'clock. So we finished doing our thing there. We were surprised. We thought it was a good crowd where we had 300, maybe 400 people there in the morning. And we were sort of, kind of trying to understand, we were all thinking, what's the event going to be like in the evening? Are these people all going to get tired and leave? At least this is what I was thinking, because I've seen it before. Like, they hear something, they're like not really that interested. And but these people were astonishing. They paid money to come for this all-day event. Ashram Maharaj had been, like for a week before or so, been going on radio programs and announcing the event and being interviewed and offering some tickets, free tickets as prizes. People call this number, and they would get, somehow someone would get a prize of a ticket or a pair of tickets, something like that. They had big advertisements in the newspapers. Tickets were being sold through Ticketron, which is a big ticket venue of people that sell tickets in the United States and in Monterey, as it turns out. And so, but they didn't really know how many tickets would have been sold or by that evening. And so 300 or 400 people have come. And as each of us spoke, they stayed through the whole thing. All of us spoke. And afterwards, they still had more questions. They came up, asked us questions. And it seemed like, probably they'll come back in the, for the program in the evening. And we were kind of like the introduction, introducing Govinda Maharaj, and kind of, trying to encourage him to come in the evening for that program where he would speak. So we went back to Madhuchanda's, or Madhumayi's place, not her place, daughter, I think, her place. Had lunch, and a little rest and prepare for the evening. And the evening we went, and we got there a little after 7, I think. And pulling up to the convention center, and we were sort of like a caravan of Suburbans, like the black with the tinted windows and the Federale police, Mexico, bodyguards for Srila Govinda Maharaj. And so we pull up in this little caravan of those vehicles, and we get out. But we see through the windows people walking all over the place going towards the convention center, obviously going towards the convention center. And when we get there, we also see a line of people going inside the convention center. And so I'm wondering, are they here for this program, or is there another event like going on at the same time? Are they coming for some other event? We get inside, and our event is upstairs on the second floor. And all the people that are coming in are going up the escalator upstairs. So then, is there another room up there? Are they going to another event? Are they coming to our event? Well, they're all coming to our event. It was the only event, and they were all coming to it. And when we we also rode the escalator up and we got to the top, you know. They're taking tickets and they're selling more tickets at the door, and it's all like an aura of excitement and anticipation, you know, like, you know, some, you know, very famous person is coming. And of course, there was. And when we walk in, then the crowd, I think everyone stood up from their chairs, and I think they began to applaud. I can't remember exactly about this, I'm not so clear, but obviously there was a really welcoming, happy greeting of Govinda Maharaj when he came in. Everyone was very happy and welcoming. And he took the stage and he spoke and he said some really beautiful things. I, of course, do not remember, but it was, I remember at the time being impressed. Oh, wow, this is one of the best talks I've heard, you know. It's really very nice. And afterwards, and some things started happening. Some devotee came with a big something in wrapping paper. And it's like about this wide, about this tall, pretty, you know, good size. And came up to the front of the stage. Some people brought flowers, like bouquets of flowers to give to Srila Govinda Maharaj. Many people did that. And this man came with some flowers and he asked if he could make a presentation to Govinda Maharaj. And someone said, you could? Govinda Maharaj said, yes, sure. What is it? And he gave Govinda Maharaj this really large painting that the man had painted himself of Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj. And with a bouquet of flowers and given to Govinda Maharaj, and, you know, please Maharaj, accept this, my gift to you, you know, something very sweet and very nice. And there were several people came forward like that, offering some gifts, some presentation. It's a heartwarming, heart-melting, beautiful, you know, astonishing, most wonderful thing I've ever seen. And then I think after that, he asked if there were any questions, and he started taking questions. It may have been before, I don't recall, but anyway, he started taking some questions. And one lady, and a lot of these people that came were obviously practicing yoga. You saw a lot of people in yogi pants and ladies just like all in white cloth, you know, like some type, following some type of yoga system or something. This lady was like that. But her question wasn't about yoga. She stood up and she asked Govinda Maharaj if he could say something about the meeting between the Pope and the Dalai Lama. Because a famous meeting had just taken place, I think in Rome. And so it was in the newspapers and radio and everything, you know, Pope meets Dalai Lama, or something like that. And Govinda Maharaj gave the most unexpected answer for me. He said, we are not politicians. Something like, or either that, or we have nothing to do with politics. No, there was nothing in her question that I recall that indicates that was the idea, you know, but that was his answer. And then she was offended. Like, she was you know, obviously disturbed, and, you know, it was like defending, I don't know whether it was the Pope or the Dalai Lama, but no, these are spiritual people, you know, and of course, actually, what was that meeting about? I'm pretty sure it was about the problems in Tibet. You know, the Chinese are making problems for the Tibetans, and they're mistreating the Tibetan people very, you know, grossly. And so the Pope was giving support to the Dalai Lama for the people of Tibet, you know, to stop this misbehavior by the Chinese. And I imagine that's why Governor Mars made the comment, we're not involved with politics. But the lady was took that as an affront to her, you know, or affront to the Pope or the Dalai Lama, I don't know which. And then began, you know, to talk at Govinda Maharaj for a significant amount of time about why this was the wrong answer, how he could think like that, you know, something, you know, sort of very argumentative, obviously argumentative. And it was translated for Govinda Maharaj, and then he gave a response. And I don't remember all that it was, but he just reiterated that our movement is a purely spiritual movement, and all of the things, you know, went elaborated on that, all the things connected with that. This is a, we have nothing to do with the things of this world. Our movement is a purely spiritual movement, and he spoke about that for maybe another 15 minutes or so. And I think the rest of us, we're like sitting on pins and needles, you know, because we're wondering, this is a local lady, this is a Mexican lady, here's this, you know, he is coming from India, she has said something about the Pope. Probably everyone in the audience is either Catholic now or was recently Catholic. And there is some sort of criticism about the Pope, and which way are they going to go after they hear what Govinda Maharaj said? They're going to support this lady and the Pope, or they're going to go with Govinda Maharaj and give him support? And I'm, you know, just very anxious and waiting, and Govinda Maharaj is giving his reply, and then there's like a pause, because he's finished speaking, but it's still being translated into Spanish. Right, now, there's a little lag time there, and there's still no reaction from the audience. So I'm like watching, you know, what are they going to do? What are they going to do? And this lady is still standing, and she's agitated, you know. And then one by one, then the lady tries to say something else. And then one by one, they start telling her, be quiet, sit down, be quiet, sit down. And then the whole crowd, you know, is like, obviously, stop, just stop, sit down and be quiet. Everyone, you know, everyone completely came to the side of Govinda Maharaj, and he had their full support. Unquestionably. So that was something that I've told this a few times, and I'm sure I'll tell it many more. It's one of the most wonderful experiences I've had in my life. I hope we'll see some more, because it's a matter of some arrangement, you know, and also a matter of some personality, some special personality. But it's not impossible to do this again, and outside of Mexico. I think if we can just make the proper arrangements, we can do this type of thing. Avadhuta Maharaj has done some things like this also in Russia, but I've seen a few of those. I've just never seen anything that had like the perfect storm. This was like perfect beauty. Like all, Srila Sridhar Maharaj talks about ear beauty, eye beauty. You know, you measure beauty by different standards according to the senses, you know, whether it's the touch, the aroma, etc. It's like everything was beautiful. You know, everything about this event was just like wonderful. One of the highlights of my life. I'm so happy that I got to be there to witness this. So, and of course, I'm pretty sure the audio of that lecture is also on our website. Any of you want to hear what the Govinda Maharaj was saying, I think you'll have that chance. If it's not there, I'm pretty sure it is. If it's not, it'll probably be up soon. Gokulananda is putting up a lot of new material that we haven't published before. So he's got 10 new things up that he's put up in the last 10 days. In 20 days, there'll be a total of 30 new recordings of Govinda Maharaj. I don't know where we got these, but Gokulananda said a lot of them are videos. So there'll be a lot of new videos of Govinda Maharaj also. All right. Anyone else want to say anything else? This is my last time to get to speak with you probably before I go. Tomorrow I'm leaving in the morning. This is also another wonderful event. I can't tell you how happy I am that I got this chance to reveal my heart and my mind to you. This is one of the tenets of Sri Rupa Goswami, to reveal one's mind and confidence to the devotees. So I don't get that chance so often. I do on an individual basis, you know, this person now and then. But I feel like I've had a very honest conversation with all of you these last few days, and I feel very happy that I got the chance to do that. I'm going to miss all of you very soon. And again, pray for your blessings for this humble soul. Keep me in your prayers and your thoughts in a good way. My request to you. All right. Jai Gaur Hari Bol, Nitai Gaur Hari Bol. Jai Parikar, Sri Sri Guru Granga Gandharva Govinda Sundara Ju Ki Jai.